Yo, what's up, everybody? Welcome to a new episode of Rugby Swag. Yes, sir, I am back, y'all, and I got great stories for today, y'all. We got a lot happening, man, from Welsh player Louis Riezemann talking down the NFL. Or is he? We look at World Rugby, man. They look like they're trying to shrink women's balls. I don't even understand what they're trying to do anymore. We got a major television rights battle happening for the Rugby World Cup. And of course, brand new women, professional women's rugby league. We're going to go into it a little bit and talk some deepness with it. We got so many stories, college rugby playoffs, international games. Yo, let's talk about this. This is Gift Time at Baylou, and let's hit that intro.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. You are now tuned in to the greatest of all time. The greatest of all time.
Welcome to the Rugby Swag Show.
Welcome. My name is Gift Time at Baylor. Of course, this is Rugby Swag. This is a show where we talk to you about the people who have taken advantage or developed or been able to be creative with the opportunity they found via rugby while keeping you up to date with what's happening in rugby news. Y'all, I've missed you. I know last week we didn't get a chance, so it's been a couple weeks. We've got a lot of things that have gone on in the time period that I took off. And of course, that time period would be when everything escalates. I love it. We get to come back into it. But of course, as this goes with anything else, I still need your help before we really get started into it. Please, if you do get the opportunity, I need you guys to absolutely like and subscribe to the videos, like and subscribe to the podcast. Like, it is helping so much. Thank you to everybody who is taking the time to give their time with the pod and be able to be part of the information and development. We're changing things. We're trying to continually grow and build and make sure we're getting the information out the way that it needs to be. But most importantly, that we can have some fun with it and really have a great discussion along with it. In addition to that, if you guys want to continue to follow up with what we have going on, absolutely check us on any of our social media. You can find us on at Rugby Swag Show on Instagram and at Gift A Baylou on X. But if you guys aren't able to go on either of those, you can find us at Gift Time Rugby everywhere else. That's Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, and Twitch at Gift Time with two T's, A Baylou. So, y'all, I want you guys to be able to catch up with us. But even more so, as I said, even more so, if you guys can absolutely let your friends and family know that if they can't watch the show and they don't want to follow on social media, please absolutely like and follow us on our podcast channels. You can find us at Rugby Swag Show on Spotify, at Apple Podcast, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, and so many more of your standard podcasting stations. Yo, we really are trying to get everywhere, trying to change up the way that we get information out for rugby, but really continuing to just enjoy having the conversation because there's so much conversation to be had. Y'all, this is going to be a very busy episode because we got a lot to catch up with. Like I said at the top of the show, so many stories. We're going to be coming in, but right before we get to it, let's talk to a little bit about the people who take care of us, because if they take care of us, we can take care of them and vice versa and make sure that these stories stay put. So stay tuned. We'll be right back talking Louis Riezemann. Be right back.
I'm going to let you get back to the show in a moment, but I want to talk to you about our sponsors, Health Enhanced Foods, the best specialty flours in the business. What does that mean for you? That is the flours that allow you to be able to get the nutritious need from your bread make. That's muffins, bread, croissants, whatever, pancakes and muffins. It will give you the opportunity to be able to get the best while still being able to eat like you wanted to. We have various amounts of products available for those who have special dietary needs to those who are looking for a special health outcome. And of course, because they're part of the Rugby Swag Show, we want to let you know that you got a chance to go to healthenhancedfoods.com and use code RugbySwag to be able to get 20% off your first order. Y'all, this is something that you're going to need. You got to build up, have your energy at the best, be the maximum. It's 2024. Let's do the best. But now, I want you guys to get into it. Let's get back to the show.
All right, y'all. So let's top of the show. I'm already going to kick this off because we're coming in hard. Louis Rees Zammit. Now, if you guys don't remember, Louis Rees is the Welsh winger who went from Wales, decided to say, hey, I am done with doing rugby for a little bit, and I'm going to the NFL. And he has gotten his shot. He has ran an amazing time during his combine. He's gotten a look at by the great Andy Reid, and officially now, he is on the NFL roster for the Kansas City Chiefs, the Super Bowl, the two-time back-to-back Super Bowl. No, that wouldn't be right because that would mean they're back-to-back twice over. They're the back-to-back Super Bowl winning Kansas City Chiefs. Louis Rees is in there at some camp. My guy Jason Bray already talking about, I suspect the post I sent you is going to cause a gift time rant. Release the beast. And he is not wrong about that, because Louis Rees Zammit was just talking with media earlier this week about the impact that NFL training camp has had on him. Now, if you guys don't know, training camp hasn't started yet, all right? Training camp hasn't started. So essentially what he has said is that the training that he has done with the NFL has been easier than the brutal Rugby World Cup Welsh training that he did leading into that Rugby World Cup under Warren Gatland. And I'm telling you, man, When I saw that, I was like, yo, you need to get your mind right, because there's a few things in here. Number one, it ain't NFL training camp time yet, so you ain't really even worked with anybody. Number two, this is OTAs. At worst, you got an IMG Academy 10-week intense training. Ain't nobody playing right now. No starters are around. Nobody's doing anything right now. Like, what are you comparing? But, you know, Thankfully for you guys, I'm not simply a headline reader. I'm not a headline reader. I'd like to be able to get the full story. And before I really, really take it in on him, I was like, let me look at what he truly said. And I'll give a context. He was actually really, really concrete with what it is and exactly what I would want from somebody in this situation to be able to talk about. So whenever it came to the conversation, there was a little bit more static to it. So what it was is that there was a 10-week camp that he did as the preseason. Obviously, this is part of OTAs. OTAs are off-season training programs. Basically, you work with early rookies. You work with coaches trying to get a little bit of a head. You're not going to get any starters. It's not really impacting your roster. Can help with your bonus and everything like that. It's just stuff to be able to get a look and get a rhythm before the real training camp kicks off. And so, obviously, he still has to go and make the 53-man roster for the regular training camp. But he was saying that during this 10-week training, it was less difficult than what he had to do in Turkey and Switzerland as he prepped for the Rugby World Cup. But the real reason was not simply the training in it of itself, but the type of training. And he says the difference was the training with footballs is anaerobic in nature, which far more suited him versus the long endurance testing that it was for the Rugby World Cup preseason training going with Wales. So for him, he was looking at it, the difference is more the explosion, the difference is more in the power, the speed, that stuff, which makes perfect sense versus with the World Cup training, it was all about trying to maintain long distance, trying to maintain endurance consistently. And for him, that explosive training worked better for his own version of, you know, rugby. And for that, it makes sense. Look, he is a speed guy. He is he's not a power guy, but he's a speed guy. He's a big guy. And he wants to be able to have the ability to cut and move and do that as opposed to having to keep an endurance rate over and over and over. And I give him credit for saying it because, again, this is something that gets really aggravating to me over the course of any of the rivalry that gets created between the NFL or American football and rugby. Like, oh, the clash of two codes, basically. And it's like, you can't compare them. Like, if you play both of them at some point in time, like, I actually play both of them, you'll realize they both have their strengths and weaknesses, all right? I got to take a neutral stance. For me, I'm a big fan of both of them. I love my American football. Obviously, that's where I'm native to. That was a sport that I really started to dig into the most, and that's the one that I have my first love with when it comes to sports. But rugby has really become my marriage piece. That's the one that I stick with over the long term. That's the one that I'm settling with, my commitment to it. And I really love what it has to offer. But it makes no sense for them to be in battle with each other. It has never made any sense for them to be in battle with each other. And even within that aspect, they also require, as he's even mentioned, very different dynamics that is needed from each of them. My guy, USA Rugby League and Union fans said the training was easier than when he was with Wales, the training before the World Cup. Exactly. But it was really particularly what was the training. And that training really was about the explosive versus endurance. And I do like the fact that he even still stated, like, yo, you still, he's not in preseason. And I think that one really makes a sense. Now, that being said, I think it's still a little bit risque for him to say it because of the fact that once you get into training camp, this is whenever you're really actually going to be doing real training. Like, you're going up against the players. Like, all this is just endurance and conditioning. Great. Whatever. It's when you're now with the starters. And I've said, I don't know if his experience, he wants to start writing checks. His experience can't pay off. And whenever those players come for training camp, they're going to bully him. Like, they're going to bully him because you got to think about it. He is a guy who's getting a shot that these guys that are going to be entering into training camp, because not everybody's drafted, not everybody's a starter. There are going to be a lot of undrafted free agents that are going to be ending up in that training camp. And they're going to be wanting to be at a wide receiver spot. And that wide receiver room as of right now for the Kansas City Chiefs is very, very, very full. And there's only so many spots that are going to be available for it. So whenever Lewis Rezamit gets into the game itself and starts doing it, he's going to get pushed around. He's going to have to show that he's not just a straight line speeder. It's, can you not just get out of your brakes? Can you read the defense? Are you able to get the push off? Can you provide separation? Are you going to be able to remember your plays? Do you know the coding? You know, these are guys that have been doing this all their lives that are going to be going through this, and they know what to do. And you're a Welsh guy who's got a supplementary academic in American football, and you're already saying, man, this training right now is easier than what we did in rugby, and these guys are about to show you up, because I don't think it's going to be accurate. I don't even – the conditioning – might be different, but once you get into training camp, it's really going to make the biggest difference. And I really hope that they don't take it personally. But I'm not going to lie. If I was a football player and I just heard this guy say that and I just read the headlines, even if I read the details, like, oh, I ran a 4.3. I was looking to run high 4.2s, low 4.3s. I was going to be fast, blah, 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 blah. Like, I'd be like, all right, buddy. Like, we got mad fast guys over here. We just had Tyreek Hill. You think your speed is going to make a difference to me? I'm going to show you what's up. So, you know, that even though there's context to what he said, I don't know if it was really wise in the way he said it, outside of being like, but I'm still learning. I can't wait until preseason, which he kind of did, but I still have to wait until preseason. And that's whenever the real testing is going to be. Right now, I'm just getting my body ready for it. So I can't wait. And I look forward to seeing what that's going to bring. And I think that would have been it. But, you know, what's said is said in his classroom, and honestly, hey, great for you to do great in the conditioning, and you know, we'll see what goes with it. Looking in the comments, yo, my guy, U.S. Rugby League Union fan says the fact that other players are going to, I'm assuming, are going to talk shit to him. Going to talk shit to him and talk about his mom will be foreign to rugby players. Yeah, no, you're right. You're going to be foreign, but you're going to have to play that game because these guys are going to go hard. Going to talk talk about your mama, gonna get into your head, gonna talk about your accent, gonna talk about where you're from, gonna talk about the fact that you ain't ever played this game, gonna talk about the fact that even though you think that having pads makes you weaker, we're about to show you what pads are about to be about. Like, I'm good. They're gonna say it. My boy Abel Rosa saying, I'm glad he said it. Yo, I mean, you know, we'll see. Like I said, I don't know what his character is. I know that he's probably a competitive person. You got to be competitive to be doing rugby. But at the same time, it's like, yo, you are literally just entering. You did the IPP, you did the combine, and now you're just doing more intense. You did IMG Academy, and you're doing more intensive. Like, honest to God, you're doing the most remedial version of football at this point. And he's going to have to prove out. Like, you're going to have to make the catch either at running back or at wide receiver. And again, that wide receiver room is heavy. And don't forget, they already won a Super Bowl. So it's not like they don't have people that are up and coming who have been able to show out. And that running back room, yo, it's really also pretty heavy hitters as well, too. So, you know, we're going to see what happens with it as well. Let me know what you guys are also thinking about when it comes to what Luis Riz-Zaman has said. Like, do you guys feel like he was in the right to be able to say what he said? Or do you think that this is something that, you know, is going to come back to bite him in the ass? And very well could. Just one last comment before we move on to the next subject. Unlike Christian, again, from USA Rugby League and Union Fan, unlike Christian Wade on his first score, I really hope he does a touchdown with the ball. Just let the habits go kick in with it. I mean, you know, that would be dope. Got to show out for it. It was nice. I actually like that play because of the fact that Frank Gore really egged him on. But obviously, the other thing that has to be said is that skill players from rugby don't do well in the NFL. So, you know, this is going to be a chance to either break the mold or you fall into the stereotype. And this experiment slowly starts to die off bit by bit. Mind you, I said skill players because linemen from rugby transitioning to the NFL seem to absolutely kill it. But yes, let me know what you guys are thinking. And, you know, I want to know where you guys are going with it. All right. Moving on, y'all. Man, let us talk about the fact that World Rugby is in the mood to just bring down the mood. And as they are trying to talk about shrinking the women's rugby balls. I love that. Love the phrasing. But either way, very serious topic right now, all right? But the reality of the situation is that there is an initiative that is happening right now where World Rugby has been looking to find ways to speed the game. Now, we've talked about in the past multiple iterations of what their five-point plan to be able to increase the game and develop it more. We've seen greater emphasis in trying to be a little bit more media. Obviously, they bought Rugby Pass, and now rugbypass.tv is kind of becoming the central hub for all international games that may or may not be played on, may not be shown on a national level. And on top of that, impacting the way that the game is played on the field, referee call, but really increasing the speed of the game. And the conversation has been about, really, particularly in this one, shrinking the women's ball from the typical 5 ball to a 4.5 size ball, which is 3% smaller, 3 to 4% lighter than what the regular game ball would be. So much closer to what really is like the youth ball, like U14, U12 ball, more of it. And the idea of this is that there was a data set provided that said that there was a far greater speed of passing and higher likelihood of catching based off of a data point that the women's had with the 4.5 ball. Now, when it comes to comparative to other sports, this is not atypical. We know in basketball, professional basketball, the WNBA has a technically smaller ball. Not technically. It has a smaller ball than NBA balls. In baseball, the softball is a bigger ball than the typical baseball. You know, but there's been a lot more history precedented to that. In this situation, the real controversy is less so about the factor that women, that there's two separate balls, but more so of the factor that consistently the pride and joy that has been part of rugby has always been about the factor that all things are equitable and equal when it comes to playing on the field for whatever size, men, women, D1, D2, elite, whatever, everybody's playing the same level of game. Now, in this kind of commitment, though, the idea of trying to improve the women's game becomes this question of who's asking this? Who's asking this? And I feel like this is sometimes a version of world rugby stepping outside of their bounds of where they need to be. I think we saw this a lot recently when it came to the reffing situation, then the rise of TMO and the over reffing through TMO, which now has become its own problematic issue in terms of how games are called, the power that goes to the refs, subsequently the abuse that occurred with refs as a result of these plays, abuse that occurred with TMO. This is another step where it's like world rugby might be going too far. Now, trying to be able to make sure I find what was the proper analysis that came with this, but it was essentially by a data scientist by the name of Lindsay Starling. And Lindsay Starling is a science and medical manager at World Rugby. And she said that, as it's quote, let me bring out the quotes because I want to make sure you guys are able to see this alongside with me. She said that with the women's, she said that because the typical adult male's hands are 10% larger than the adult female, you find that in trials, what actually happens is that the women's play with the smaller ball, they've committed to trialing, and the women play with the smaller ball has begun to show signs that there might be more speed that goes along with it. You know, I get the idea. I get the idea if the problem had persisted. Look, we constantly have been able to see that at the elite level, we're not seeing a loss. I look at Portia Woodman. Is she losing anything on the ball? Seems to be pretty elite. Emily Scarrett, even though she's more so just coming into play. Look at Charlotte Kaslick. I'm talking more in sevens. Look at someone like, you know what? I'm going to stick in sevens because that's where we see the fastest moment. Look at a Nia Tapper. Look at a Jasmine Joyce, who's tiny. Jasmine Joyce is tiny. Ain't having problems holding on to the ball. So, yes, the idea of it being maybe smaller hands makes sense logically. But are we seeing a real disruption in the game at the levels that matter most, which is at the highest levels? Now, if we're talking about things that are happening at club levels, we're talking about at the youth levels, maybe we can have a conversation. But even within that, I have to go back and ask, like, are we seeing so significantly of a throw off that the women are complaining about not having it? And I know there's people saying that it's divided, but I don't feel like we're seeing a conversation that's divided 50-50. I think we're seeing a conversation of a not even loud minority, like a slightly higher toned minority that might be talking about, oh, what if the balls were smaller or being able to grip it? But I think there's another conversation here that has to be had. And I saw this online that was really great. So I don't want to take the credit for it, but I don't know where it was. I saw it on Facebook. But someone really made a great point in the fact that if you change the balls, you inherently put a disadvantage to the growth of club women's rugby. Why? Because typically a women's rugby program is developed after the men's rugby program. And they utilize the offsetting material from the men's program for the women's program before they usually get their own thing. So if you end up shrinking the size of the ball for a club team or a college team, you are in essence either increasing the cost to be able to play rugby for a women's side and inherently creating a disadvantage for developing that because the men's side might not want to invest that money into it, or the women's side might not have the financial means to be able to complete and develop their side. But you're also putting that disadvantage on the growth of the girls from a youth measure in terms of knowing that you have a credible sport that, at least from a position of equitability, nobody can talk about it. Ain't nobody can talk about it, you know? So, yes, women have naturally smaller hands on average. But again, in this situation, are we seeing enough of a disadvantage to make it worth it? And from what I'm seeing, especially at the top levels, where you want to see it matter most, because that's where your majority of your money is going to be coming into. That's where majority of your attention is going to be coming into, where the majority of your credibility is going to be coming into. You're not seeing an overall, I don't feel like there's an overall complaint that's being had with it. So I argue against it. I want to know what you guys think about this. I know we're seeing it a lot online, a lot of women retorting against it because it doesn't make sense to them. And I'm like I said, I completely agree. But let's look at it from the other side. Let me know from your and to some extent, let's look at it from a position logically as opposed to protecting people from themselves, which I feel like a lot of the conversation goes to of protect the women from themselves so we know better. Like I don't think that goes well in this. But actually make the conversation in terms of viewership, in terms of the growth ability, in terms of financial ability, what is the advantage that goes with this? And again, you know, they're saying it's faster game, fewer rucks, scrums, while kicking and lineouts throws might also mean improvement in accuracy and distance. But again, are we seeing that? Are we really seeing that at the highest level, the club level, the college level, the youth level? Let me know what you guys think about that, all right? All right, y'all. We got to take care of those that take care of us. We're going to be right back. Of course, I want to talk a little bit about what's happening with the Women's Rugby World Cup. I think there's some really great news taking it up to another positive level. But we'll be right back after these messages. This is Gift Gift Tommy Bailey with Rugby Swag Show. Stay tuned.
They're the wheat flour that you can eat. My name is Gift Gift Time at Baylor. I'm here with Health Enhanced Foods. And I want to tell you about one of our best and most beloved products, our sweet white wheat baking mix. Now, this is the baking mix for those who are not really looking for something that's gluten-free, but they are looking for something that they can eat that is going to still be healthy and is not going to be dangerous. White flour is typically a very processed, incredibly bleached flour, and it's not good for you. It's incredibly cheap for a reason. Our sweet white wheat bread mix is whole grain, dairy-free, high in dietary fiber, free of additives, and is absolutely unprocessed and unrefined. With our sweet white wheat bread mix, you can feel like you're getting all the same rewards that you would get from poor white bread, but with all the nutritional value. You're able to still make your bread loaves or your cakes, your flat bread or your cookies, but you don't have to feel like you are going to be robbing yourself of good carbohydrates. You can get the sweet white wheat bread mix from healthenhancedfoods.com. Absolutely go impress your friends and family with the greatest bread while not making them feel like they have to be gluten-free at the same time. No dangers, full body pleasures. Go ahead and get yours today. Let's go.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back, y'all. I just, my boy, USA Rugby League and Union Fan had one thing to say on our last story about the sizing. And he was saying, just do size 4, keep it simple. Again, I don't think the issue is size 4, 4.5, 3, 2. I think the issue is a factor of dropping it from 5. and that five has been a consistency for whatever the standard has been. Let's say 100 years. 100 years for everybody. Why change that? What is the reason to change it if there has been no effect? But again, you know, we'll see how it all goes from there. But I want to move on to our next story, which talks really heavily about what is happening with the 2025 Women's Rugby World Cup. And I think this is very good because it's something that you have to have for that. And what's currently happening is that there is a three-way television rights tie for the television rights for the 2025 Women's Rugby World Cup. Now, in the U.S., none of these channels matter to us because who the hell cares? But I look at this as something that can be used as a leveraging point and talks about it. So apparently the BBC, ITV, and Channel 4 are all in a three-horse race to be able to secure the television rights for next year's 2025 Women's Rugby World Cup. Now, I find this to be very important because obviously if you guys have paid attention to the last two Women's Rugby World Cup, 2017, which I've notably said is my single favorite Women's Rugby World Cup of all time, has not been topped in any direction, in my opinion. It is one where I think we saw the first real spike in viewership for the Women's Rugby World Cup. Happened in Ireland. You saw an increase in notation online. You saw an increase in streaming. You saw an increase in attendance as well. Then you fast forward to the 2022 Women's Rugby World Cup that we just had happen recently, and you saw another quote-unquote increase in viewership. There were more, there were sold-out games. This happened to also be in New Zealand while also kind of under COVID restriction, while also kind of like that. So I think the numbers for viewership were a little bit better, even though they were difficult to see because it's New Zealand, and you know, for most people it's either 6 to 12 hours difference. But the attendance record was definitely up, even despite the fact that it being in New Zealand. You saw more engagement online, and obviously there had been an increase. So this 2025 that's now back in England has been getting all the spotlight in terms of really trying to identify how to maximize this effort fully. We've seen great play out of the Women's Six Nations that are currently happening. Right now, England is looking like they're taking the lead. And it looks like we're looking at another two-horse race between England and New Zealand. While England is 0-2 in the Rugby World Cup against New Zealand, they've been able to see incremental development from because of their professional league, because of their selection, just absolutely murdering it during the Six Nations, and are clearly the best team in Europe. Clearly the best team in Europe. But that being said, there is a lot of pressure that goes with this because of the fact that it is a major turning point for this Women's World Cup and is something that World Rugby is really trying to pay attention. Now, as it's been explained, it's era-defining moment for the sport, and there are such high hopes that the tournament can turbocharge Women's Rugby in a similar way how the Lioness 2022 European Championship transformed women's soccer. Like, it is so heavily being put on. So, I know for this, it's great to have this leverage and you need that. At the same time, I'm hoping that this is a model or that the England Rugby Union can actually use this and help other people around the world, even though they typically don't want other people around the world to do better. But hopefully they can bring this one up along and be able to create a stronger leverage point for these games. World Rugby obviously is putting out more games to try and do this, but this one I think it can set a very high marker for women's rugby. But let me know what you guys think on this one, man. Like, do you feel like this is one of those games where that leverage point will be important, or do you think they'll really get paid off of this, really? Or do you think that this is just, you know, another step in the cog, but life tends to happen back at fourth. Obviously, I think we're seeing a huge surge in women's sports, and a lot of that is just because of the fact that obviously the work that's getting put in, but I think we're finally seeing the years with WNBA. We're seeing this new wave, and this is, we're talking about now 20, 25 years. 20, no, not now 20. Oh, my gosh. almost 30 years of women's basketball, with women's rugby, with the first Rugby World Cup. We're coming up on what, almost, we're coming up on almost 40 years now. Almost 40 years since the rugby, Women's Rugby World Cup, 35 years, give or take. So things starting to have to peak, even though professionalism is, what, 28 years old at this point. So we're starting to see the seeds finally come to roost. So I'm hoping this actually helps lead to something that we're looking to. And this leads what to our next story perfectly, which is the entrance of the new professional women's rugby league. Women's elite rugby. Y'all. This one I am so very, very hyped for and have so many expectations for this one. Because, one, I'll be honest with you, I knew about this happening, I think, probably almost 2 months ago. I think a lot of people, it wasn't the best kept secret in the world, but, you know, I know people that are working on this, and this was something that was starting to build up for a little bit. I think we were seeing the elements of it coming out of the WPL because of the fact that, you know, what we saw with MLR, now is time to be able to see what could be done with the women's side as well. But that being said, it looks like it's finally arrived, announced itself. It's expected to be able to start in 2025. A lot of people have already talked about this. But, you know, the question is, what is the sustainability and capability that it can have? Because we are really looking at a lot of the growing pains that happened with the MLR. Speaking of which, Blue Sox, shout out to you, Blue Sox, said the WER, the women's wing of the MLR, nope, not a part of the MLR ownership. They are a separate league working under their own separate union-owned separate administration. By the way, shout out to one of our guests, former Howard University women's rugby coach and Howard University women's rugby director of rugby, Catherine Aversanu. You can actually check out an interview of hers on our podcast here. I don't remember the episode number, but definitely go check it out. She was announced as the vice president for the women's elite rugby. She's already been doing great things with women's premier rugby, already doing great things with the Women's Rugby Foundation. So this is another big step forward for her. So shout out to her. But no, this is not connected with the MLR. And I think that's really, really important to know, because obviously we talked about this earlier. Oftentimes when a women's league is created, it is created as an offset of what the men's side is doing. So basically they share their same resources, but subsequently are, you know, really given scraps. Like let's call a spade a spade. Like we know this. So in this situation, the structure is completely self-contained. Now, Women's Elite Rugby put a great post, especially in comparison to the WPL, about what is to be taken from this WER and what does it differ from the WPL. So what they said on this over here on LinkedIn, and you guys, let me get you guys over here, of course. What they said on this was, number one, the differences that are done between the WPL and the WER. Obviously, the WPL, first and foremost, is a nonprofit because of the fact that it works within the club systems. It is not a part of any pay-for model. It is a pay-to-play. It is elite D1 club rugby for women, but it is not professional. I currently have 7 teams. You know, season starts April 27th, which is next week. It's run basically through grants and donations and such, yada, yada, yada. Whereas WER is a for-profit, player-paid, dedicated staff, single-entity professional model. Now, what does it mean to be a single entity? It means that the WER is following a model that allows rugby to be universally marketed to consumers rather than each team market doing what they're able to afford. So basically, they're following a method that is much more similar to what pro rugby was under, what was his name? Schroeder, a few years back. Centralized funding, centralized pool, where the league is owned, the league owns the teams, and then the teams subsequently are funded from that pool. I think Premier Rugby Sevens, and if I'm getting that wrong, absolutely correct me, but Premier Rugby Sevens runs a very similar gamut where the individual teams might have sponsors or funders, but it's basically funded from the inside out. But I might be wrong on that one. But I know definitely pro rugby back in 2016 was definitely within that model. Also within the funding, obviously they're going to try and make it in the better way that they know, media deals, corporate sponsorships, merchandising, ticket sales. And then in terms of what is it going to impact the value of the WPL, which I think a lot of people are going to be worrying about because the WPL has been around for so long. But I think like it impacted MLR, impacted D1 men's rugby, it's going to end up being the same way with WPL. And what they said is, as a conversation is ongoing, the value of the WPL is going to be as a pathway towards professionalization, as well as coast-to-coast pay-to-play model, because they feel like the coast-to-coast pay-to-play model is not sustainable. And I think that makes a lot of sense. Again, you know, what you see from what you're going to get from the WPL or from programs like that is going to always be limited because of the fact that it's difficult to shift up these bases to professional, because obviously one shift in the term. So if you're already as a 501c3 and moving to an LLC, that plays a lot in tax issues. Number two, perception. Like there is a mental game that goes along with that. And it plays into what players get picked up and get played. And number three, like it does change. We saw with the MLR, they tried to do it off from club teams and ultimately had to separate into separate entities for themselves for one reason or the next. Blue Sox commented, it will be interesting to see how WER develops. MLR just lost to Toronto Arrows, my team, and apparently Rugby ATL moved to LA and is now RFC LA. Do you know more about it? So with this one, again, knowing the guys that have been a part of it, that are a part of it, they really have been paying attention to what's going on with the MLR. Now, their intent is to be able to raise money. I think that's first and foremost. To be able to raise money for the sustainability team. There's a lot of expertise that's going along with it. On the other side of it, though, there is still the challenge of being able to build a sustainable model. I do believe that they're going to look at something that is similar to what they're doing in Argentina. And if you guys get a chance, check out our past episode. You can find it on YouTube with Eusebio Guniezu. He talked about how Argentina's model basically works as the premier level, the elite level, is where most of the money goes into. And then players are able to transition to regional areas. Basically, each of these places have a regional ground for their network of players. And they use their elite services to be able to help guide players. So professional players become coaches and mentors. The regional sites are used to develop younger elite athletes and younger potential athletes as well, and be able to consistently create a source where all the teams that are under the region of that professional team utilize the professional team as a source for materials, a source for education, as a source for scouting. And so I think what we'll see happen with this, at least at the beginning, is that the women's elite rugby are going to end up finding themselves as regional scout and development for the youth. And that should help develop their community and help develop their plan. Shout out to Mike Feely. To McFeely with really talking a lot about that. My guy Abel Rosa said, I truly believe WER will do good. I feel like it will be the only professional full contact sport for women like the NFL, but for women, if it that makes sense. Obviously, in the USA, because obviously Western Europe has the women's premiership rugby that is currently going on and is what's making England a super powerhouse team. USA Rugby League and Union fan says MLR is losing a lot of cash. WER will be hemorrhaging cash. You are absolutely correct. 100% will absolutely hemorrhage cash. Both of these teams, I hope, work in conjunction with each other to be able to develop, while not, again, sharing necessarily the resources, but really sharing on developing the community, because developing that community element and developing casual fans are going to be a really big asset. I will say this, though. And I think I've noticed this very heavily when it comes to women's rugby. And I talked about this with some of the other interviewees, and I've talked about this behind the scenes. But I do believe that the women's side has done an improved job in being able to create a media presence for themselves online. And that plays very heavily into connecting out with the community. A lot of what you've been able to see, a lot of what the women's side has had to do because of the fact that they weren't getting normal coverage from the men's side has been a factor of trying to formulate their own identity. And I think when it came to social media, obviously we've seen players like Ilyona Marr and Charlotte Kaslick, Portia Woodman, really be able to see their stardom skyrocket because of their social media. And I think because of that, World Rugby, especially World Rugby Council, and especially the women's rugby side, really started running with that. And I think the WELR will be able to take advantage of that same element. Now, I do feel like they're going to have to be very guerrilla with what they're doing. And I think the one thing that they're not going to be able to do with that MLR did is be more timid about what happens off the field. I think with MLR, they focus so much about their on-field product that they really let loose on what happened off the field. And so some of those connections that in cities like Atlanta, where they had a huge celebrity community that they could have tapped into that would have been interested in. I know this personally would have been able to be interested in it. Or right now what they have in LA with everything that's happening. LA is a sports town that cares whenever you care. And I think we're starting to see little tidbits here and there with the social media teams. But I think that the WER is going to have to over-leverage on marketing outside and jump on the wave of what's going on with women's basketball, jump on the wave of women's soccer, and really find a way to connect these pieces together as opposed to trying to be an opposing force. Because otherwise, it's going to hemorrhage a lot of money, and it's going to be very difficult to bring it back. The other thing that's a really disadvantage that right now they would not be able to do is stadium. This is a lot of where the hemorrhaging of money happened with MLR. So using a team like Houston Sabercats, one of the biggest advantages that Houston Sabercats have is that they have their own stadium. That stadium for pro teams is where the money truly is made. It's not off of the games initially. It is off of the events you get to put on it. It's off of the concessions you get to get from it. It's off of the merchandise and the stabilization. New Orleans Gold kind of has a situation like that, but they kind of rent it from the city still. So they still have to give out money, but they do have a lot more control over it. But that being said, the Gold Mine is a shared city stadium. So come the off season, obviously the Gold have a more hands-off on that stadium and on other teams, whether it's baseball team or whether it's other events, those get, if I remember correctly, held on by the city itself. So it's difficult to hold a pro team when you don't have a stadium, but obviously stadiums cost millions, tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions if you want one that's up to date. So finding a way around that and finding ways to be able to compensate for those stadiums are going to be a big deal, especially as you are trying to build your fan base. And of course, this is all supposed to help lead into 2031 Rugby World Cup in the USA. I wonder if World Rugby is going to try and invest into the WER like they've invested into MLR with the anthem. Though, I don't know if that would be a good usage of money. But like you said, USA Rugby League and Union Fan, this is not going to be a situation where money is going to be profitable anytime soon, because it's already hard enough in the niche against rugby as a women's sport, and then subsequently as a new pro sport in the women's element. But as Abel Rosa said, it's a full contact, professional, fully professional league for women. There is women's semi-pro American football, but it's semi-pro. Abel Rosa said they should copy the last World Cup and just stack the shipping containers for Yo, yeah, just wrap it up. Wrap it up all the way around it. And, I mean, yo, feel the dream style, baby. Feel the dream style. Blue Sox said, after the Guiltinis went away, it was promising to see another rugby team back in L.A. Yeah, I mean, look, the situation with the MLR also was really convoluted. Like, the reason they Rugby ATL had to move, because the owner died. The reason why Toronto Blue Arrows had died, because the owner died. The LA team, the original one with the Guiltinis, and obviously that also impacted the Gilgronis in Austin, is because freaking the owner basically had a Ponzi scheme of a company, an F45. Like, I think in New Jersey, I've seen still one gym, but like him and Mark Wahlberg had, you know, that whole company went to pieces once it went public. So, you know, there are other extenuating circumstances on top of the obvious financial ones that are going on. But in terms of MLR, I've always said, I think this year MLR had to do it because of the amount of losses that they took. I think there's a pride thing, and I think they'll get their stuff straight. And then with the WER, again, it's just going to be about the challenges and about the support and about really, really pushing the marketing. They have to be guerrilla. They have to be guerrilla. If you go in a traditional marketing way, this will fail. This will absolutely fail. WPL will still exist, but this iteration will absolutely, absolutely fail if they do not go in non-traditional formats of marketing and communicating with people. So let me know what you guys think about it, man. What's your thoughts on the WER? Where do you think the possibility is with it? And what do you think that they have to be able to gain from this? I mean, I think obviously they got a lot to gain. Professionalization, regular play, that's always going to be a big deal. And obviously with Premiership Rugby, that'll be both codes having a professional rugby side. But again, we'll see what it works. See what happens. Don't follow Europe. Whatever you do, don't follow Europe. All right, y'all. Let's get to another set of commercials. Obviously, we got to talk a little bit about what's going on in college rugby. But I want to, before we get there, we're going to talk a little bit about what's happening internationally in South America. But we'll be right back with that story. This is Gift A Bailu with Rugby Swag. Please just stay tuned.
Buckwheat is changing lives. My name is Gift A Bailu. I'm here with Health Enhanced Foods, and I want to tell you about one of my favorite products on our shelves, Buckwheat Baking Mix. Buckwheat is a seed that is incredibly nutrient and protein dense. But what makes it even more important,
that buckwheat baking mix
is absolutely gluten-free. A lot of times whenever people have buckwheat mixes, they actually even hold wheat inside of it. So you know it's not fully gluten. And if you're a person that is celiac or diabetic, or you're just really trying to be health conscious, it's not something that you want to have to worry about. What makes our buckwheat baking mix even more important is that it is versatile. You can use it for pancakes. You can use it for waffles. You can use it for making loaves of bread. You can make it for cupcakes. But what helps even more is that it is allergen free. It is nut free. It is dairy free. That there is no additional additives in it. There's no leavening there, so that if you want to be able to raise your bread, you can put in the baking powder yourself and get it fluffy. If you don't, you absolutely do not have to. You get the bread that you love without the cost to your health. You can absolutely find buckwheat baking mix at healthenhancedfoods.com. Absolutely check it out. Get your nostalgia back. Get back to eating and loving the way that you are, and absolutely get back to the energy that you know that you can get without having to destroy yourself. I'm looking forward to seeing you get it. Let's go.
All right. Let's get back to it. Yo, y'all, we got a little something going down in South America. Now, I love this story because of the fact that, over this last year, we've seen World Rugby create the multi-tiers and separate tier one more so into its spot with its little 16, 19 little competition, basically the WXV, but for men's. And then, of course, what we've been able to see with development from the Rugby World Cup, and we saw scrappy teams really show out. And this is one of the scrappy teams that really put it out there, which was Uruguay. And Uruguay is one that has been steadily growing. As a U.S. person, we know Uruguay well because they kicked us out of the Rugby World Cup of our first Well, our first standing to be able to get qualification. And then, of course, obviously, Chile, then Portugal absolutely put the death nail into us. But Uruguay also showed us that they could hold up fairly well against a Tier 1 team, because in the Rugby World Cup, they played France close. That score, don't let the score fool you. Don't let that score fool you. Uruguay was putting it to France, and France was on its back of its heels for that game. But it looks like Uruguay was able to say, hey, yo, y'all need to stop trying to forget about us. Y'all need to stop trying to underestimate us, because we got a schedule and we got something to show. And they put together a schedule that is absolutely legit, absolutely legit for the summer. So it looks like they are going to be playing out three games over the summer primarily, all right? Three really strong games. Shout out to Paul Tate of American Rugby News for putting this out. It looks like on July 10th, they get the rematch against France in Uruguay. July 20th, they're up against their neighbors, Argentina. And then on July 27th, they get to go back home and play Scotland. I don't care what side of the team, because I know France has to bring it. They don't got DuPont anymore, and Scotland is going to be coming off. Obviously, Finn Russell should be healed up by that point if they bring their number one side, but I feel like they'll probably be their B side because Premiership is still going on, URC is still going on just around that time. But this is one of those situations where this is what you want from the schedule. Now, don't get me wrong, Uruguay is about to get boat raced by all three of these teams. Like, let's not play like Uruguay is going to play them tough, but I think the final score is going to be an absolute boat race. But I do feel like this is a situation where Uruguay is going to be able to level up a little bit and be able to get the more out of their players. I hope it's not going to be in the same style that our increase of play was whenever we played the All Blacks in 2014. But I do think that this is an opportunity because Uruguay has a very strong developing rugby program from their men's side. And I think with Argentina really trying to assist most of South America in their development, this is something that can be able to utilize. And Uruguay has great coaching. They have formidable players. They're no longer playing like club players. Add that, you got the Super Rugby Americas. So they kind of have their semi-pro team that allows them to have a lot more 24/7 training, on top of the fact that because it's a small country, even their national team plays together a lot. So these guys are really just getting constant action over and over and over again. And from my point of view, I think that's legitimate. I think that's what we want, and that's what we even want from the U.S. And I think, this is those things that are coming in. So shout out to them for scoring, for scheduling. But really, I give a lot of credit to France and Scotland for being willing to come and do it and take the time out. That being said, I also assume they want to come to South America and get some heat, because most of these players are either going to South Africa and then getting mollywopped with their club teams, or they just don't get a chance to. Though I do worry about them getting burned, but it's July. It's wintertime, so it's not even time that's going to be hot for them either. So that's going to be a nice little difference for it. So I felt like this is one that was a really good story, really good scheduling setup, and really commendable by both Uruguay and by these respective teams themselves. So, yo, let me know, like, how do you feel like the scheduling goes? And do you think that it is something to be indicative that maybe these tier one teams should be getting more of this tier two life underneath it? Because obviously, starting next year, we got the tier one, tier two, tier three competition. What was it? The World Rugby. I don't know. I call it the World Rugby Cup annually now. That's basically that, but it's just in those separate tiers that now make it 6 years before maybe one of those tier two teams are going to play a tier one team outside of the U.S. and the Pacific Nations Cup. And obviously, this is my own tier twos going through. But I do hope that a lot of these teams are breaking out of that and will allow themselves to get to play in a real major way. All right, y'all. We got another one. We're going to come back. I got college rugby for you guys. I've got some college rugby going on for you guys. Let me just throw a few comments that kind of went back to what we had just talked about with the WER. Blue Sox was talking about, I was buying tickets for the San Diego Legion Utah Warriors this weekend and saw RFC LA on the schedule. I didn't even know about them until yesterday. Shake my head. Hey, man, we got to keep it up. USA Rugby League and Union fans saying, yo, I'm a season holder for RFC LA. It's been amazing. USA Rugby League and Union fans have been running all over the West Coast, just taking in all the rugby. League, sevens, Union, 15s, just eating it all. I commend to the work being done on that one. And then Alex Rosa saying, tier one teams should definitely play other tier teams. A bunch of snobs with their noses in the air don't want to play with the pole folk. Them pole folk, man. Look, I agree with you. I do also say that, and I talked about this in another episode beforehand, that I do feel significantly about the factor that I do like the fact that tier two teams should be able to play with themselves, but should be developing very strongly within their tier and develop all the aspects of the rugby for them. Because I feel like the tier ones really get the advantage from having history. They're not really, it's not that they're not good. Obviously they're good, but history plays such a heavy hand on them. Their community is history. People have been doing it generationally. And I do feel like there is obviously a complacency with them, which is why they see so many financial straits in these areas. But I think in tier two, they have a chance that you could take over. But again, it doesn't take away from the fact that I still think tier one and tier two should have still their occasional games, and it helps as sharpening iron in either direction. So take it from there. All right, y'all, let's get to this commercial break, and then we'll be back talking college rugby. D1A playoffs have been absolutely killing it. My bracket got busted. Let's see what's going on. This is Gifted Bailu with Rugby Swag Show. Be right back.
Hey everybody, this is just the break train sending out a personal little video diary to all you people out there, where I am going to document me riding most of the way between Singapore and Tokyo for the 2019 Rugby World Cup.
I needed help, and it came from Louisiana.
We in Singapore, baby!
Gift from Gift Time Rugby USA is an extroverted tour de force, but what unites us is a hunger for adventure.
Off to KL, Kuala Lumpur.
Woo! Yeah! Woo!
Gift, where are we?
We're in Vietnam!
Morning, Vietnam!
Mount Fuji, baby!
Our love of Asian rugby culture.
One, two, three, center!
Yeah! Rugby's is starting to develop here in Cambodia for women as well.
Valkyries, the mighty, mighty Valkyries!
We're out here, we're running out of energy, we're running out of money, and we're feeling isolated. And yet at that critical moment, friends, family, sometimes complete strangers come on board Before you know it, we're back in the game.
Tokyo, here we come.
Malaysia, Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam. Watch the full adventure at crugby.vhx.tv. That's C like S-E-E rugby.vhx.tv. Yo, welcome back. Welcome back. All right, man. Let's talk about the D1A Collegiate Rugby Playoffs. This is in the USA men's side. And we did the bracket for it because they provided us a bracket for it. And I thought it was something to be able to fill out. Well, y'all, it looks like we got to our final fours. And I was half wrong. Just half wrong. I know my side. And I talked about this before. Look, I know my East Coast. I'm an East Coast guy, all right? I have not lived on the other side of the Mississippi, all right? Louisiana, Iowa, Florida, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, technically, if you want to say it right now. I never crossed that line to the West Coast. So I know my East Coast people, all right? But the West Coast kind of played me. So a couple weeks ago, before we took our break, I had my bracket with my final four. I expected it to have been Navy, Life, Central Washington, and Cal. Well, y'all, I was proven very wrong because, man, it came out the other way. Navy and Life University, I got it right. Like I said, East Coast guy, East Coast killing. But my West Coast was off. At BYU ended up defeating Arkansas State in a manner that is borderline disrespectful. Oh, my gosh. Like, borderline did a 50 BYU ended up defeating them. I had Navy doing that. BYU defeating Central Washington. What was the score? Sorry, I had it because I had BYU against Arkansas State. Central Washington, 40-24, a whooping that I did not expect BYU to do because I just didn't expect them to be as good a team like that. And then SMC St. Mary's absolutely defeating Cal, who has been top of the game all season long, all the hype, running through them, even beat St. Mary's, ended up losing. St. Mary's ended up beating them. What was the score? Ended up beating them 15-3. No, ended up beating them 34-16 in a close game. You know, again, big shout out BYU, St. Mary's, consistently being able to be the overarching powerhouse that they've been for the better part of the last 15 years, honestly. But Life University and Navy, that was a game that I absolutely am not surprised about. But again, shout out Life University getting a big win over Lindenwood University. That's a rivalry. I feel like that's a rivalry that's going to last until the end of time, because those two teams just have such history with each other on both the men's and women's side, which we'll talk about a little bit later. And then Navy absolutely mollywhopped Arkansas State. This was the one that was disrespectful, 57-5, which again was not surprising because Arkansas State is just not the same as they were, you know, pre-COVID, and they've gone through a lot of turnover since they've come through. So, you know, it is what it is. But we got it this weekend. A great semifinals. Navy is the defending champion right now. Life University won 3 years ago. 3 years ago they won it. Obviously, Army 2 years ago, and then Navy this past year. But last year. But this one, I think, is one for the ages. I absolutely do think, though, that Life University still continues on and will get the win. And then BYU versus St. Mary's, as much as BYU absolutely got through and a nice big win over Central Washington, St. Mary's, if they beat Cal like they did and they beat Cal, St. Mary's is going on to win the West. Like, in my opinion, it's almost unlikely. Like, St. Mary's is so culturally set that they are almost consistently finding ways to be able to win. Those are teams that they don't lose. They just They just find, they always find ways to win. It just finds it. But I legitimately believe that Life University is going to win the championship. Like, it's just everything is setting up for Life University to go ahead and win that this championship this year. But that Navy game, Life University game, is going to be a tough one. I think it's going to be absolutely worth watching for it. But this goes back to continue with what I said, why Life University and Lindenwood rivalry is so important. Life University women in the D1 Elite took the trophy in an absolute barn burner of a game. Like, yo, that game was everything that you want from a rugby game, winning 44-41. I had a feeling it was going to be this way. And this one is a little bittersweet because of the fact that obviously both of the original coaches that started these teams in Billy Nicholas for Lindenwood and obviously Rosalind Chow for Life University have all moved on. Billy retired and Rosalind is now with Brown University. But to see that this rivalry is still continuing and these teams are still powerhousing through with new administrations at coaching, I think it's a thing of beauty. I'd still for every other team, but step up. Like at this point, it's find a way to copycat or you got to get off the pot because these teams are going to keep coming back at it harder and harder and harder and harder. And I don't think there's any stopping them with that. So big shout out to them with that, to Life University on another win in 15. I think it's been since 2019, 2020 that they won in 15s, maybe 2018. But man, that big win for them, man. Big win to them. But that takes nothing away from Lindenwood. Two powerhouse teams. Some of the best to watch. It's the reason why I'm not a big believer in shrinking the ball, because they seem to do just fine with it. And then lastly with it, I want to talk about my guys over at Howard Men's Rugby. Yo, big shout out to these guys because they have continued to show progression over the years. A team that is simply 3 years old, but really 2 years old, 2.5 years old. And they have been able to increase each year. Right now, they had the opportunity of winning the regional championships in the NCR for the CRCs. I just said a whole bunch of acronyms. Let me try that again. Howard University won in the National Collegiate Rugby Division, known as the MRC, the Mid-Atlantic Rugby Conference, and they were able to win their second regionals, to win their first regionals, but get their second qualification into the college rugby, the NCR College Rugby Championships, this time as the front running winners. Great congratulations to Howard University, man, who are also our 2023 HBCU Rugby Classic champions. They've continued to be able to develop out a great video with them as they're getting their trophy. I got to show this one out because I thought this was incredibly meaningful in what they did and in their development, because what's happening on both the women's side and their run through and probably going to end up at another D2 CRAA championship, the men are doing within sevens and finals.
Check this out. Like, I don't know if everybody knows, but last year you guys got a bid and played the Premier Division, and I think that really showed a lot for the growth of your program. Right, congratulations on an awesome season, and for the automatic bid to the CRCs. Woo!
Yo, that's great. Like I said, this is something very always significant for the development of HBCU rugby, which is an area that consistently needs to be done because it's community element. There is a culture that goes to it, and I think that also enhances USA American rugby, which is what we always need. So big shout out to Howard University, my guys over there. Shout out to Tito Miranda and the rest of the coaching crew. And shout out to the entire Howard University program because they're winning. Like, they're winning. Elite at HBCU collegiate, and they're elite, getting better and better at the rugby levels, y'all. Man, I love it. Let me know what you guys are thinking in terms of what your thoughts on our college rugby. Where you think of for D1A elite, D1A rugby? Who do you think is going to win it all? What are your thoughts on how Life University and Lindenwood were able to show up and show out for the women's side and absolutely represent in their consistent rivalry that they always are going to be having? But y'all, I love it. I absolutely love it. All right, y'all, we got one last ad, then we're going to close this thing out. I want to thank you guys so much. Stay tuned. We'll get some closing remarks after these messages. This is Gift Time at Baylor with Rugby Swag. Just stay tuned. We'll be right back.
All right, I don't want to hold you guys off. I know it's another ad. Watch out now. But I need to tell you guys about Rugby Outlet Mall. Look, this is the official e-commerce store for Rugby Swag Show and for Gift Time Rugby Network. And of course, we want to make sure that we are hooking you up with gear that is absolutely built for you to be able to wear on a day-to-day. Of course, we can do jerseys, and everybody has a jersey, but not everybody wears a jersey every day. But we have the rugby gear for you. Whether it is our FedEx best or our PayPal best, we have unique designs that are going to be fun and desirable for you to represent the way that you need to. And of course, if you guys go to rugbyoutletmall.com and use the code GROWRUGBY, we're going to save you 10% off your first order. Hey, please support Rugby Swag Show. And of course, even some of our other stuff, the HBC Rugby Classic, and just general gear and merch for you guys. Because, hey, I want you guys to have the best. And I definitely appreciate you guys supporting. So definitely go rugbyoutletmall.com. Use promo code GROWRUGBY, G-R-E-A-U-X, rugby, and you will get 10% off your first order. Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys. And let me let you get back. Cheers.
All right, y'all. All right, man. I want to thank you guys so much for making it and watching the show. Yo, shout out to all y'all in the comments, man. Y'all are hilarious. If you guys aren't checking it out, like, this is community right here, man. Shout out Abel Rosas, Blue Sox, USA Rugby League Union fan. Thank you guys so much, Jason Bray, for being part of the conversation. Of course, you guys can always be part of the conversation. Obviously, tonight we're up a little bit later, but typically we're going to be here at least Wednesdays, lives on Wednesdays, really trying to show out and show up and really make something of it. Of course, guys, definitely go and check out some of our older episodes. I want to thank you guys. You know, check out some of our great interviews, great people coming through. We got more coming up. There's going to be a lot. I a lot of rugby happening, a lot of rugby news happening. Obviously, the Olympics are coming, but we got even more things that we got to get ready for on this one. But I really do appreciate all of y'all for being a part of it. Yo, USA Rugby fan, Rugby League and Union fan, thank you. Love the ads, Gift. They're amazing dudes. You do a great job. Thank you for the support. Thank you for paying attention. And thank you for always commenting. I always appreciate you, like I said. But in the meantime, y'all, I hope that you guys know that I hope that you are happy. I hope that you are healthy. Truly, most importantly, every day, and I hope you guys remind yourself this, every day you get a chance to wake up, because there's a lot happening in the world, that you are truly, truly highly favored. Until next time, y'all. Cheers.